You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, first world problems. Not just any first world problems, first world video game problems. Doesn't get more firster than that. Also, we move a game from the pile of shame to future retro, but our pile of shame keeps growing. Why? Why?
I don't want to play you anymore, Onechambra.
Hey, Vink.
Hey, Sean.
So, how are you liking your 3DS?
A lot. Quite a bit. I am enjoying it. It's beautiful. It's functional. I like it.
Awesome. Maybe we should explain.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So, you've had a Japanese one since forever, but...
Yep.
You've mentioned more than once on the show that you don't have an American one, that you can't buy a game,
yep.
Say, Yakuten Saiban.
Yes.
For instance. And I just happen to have a 3DS laying around because about a year ago, they released the special edition Zelda 3DS XL with Link Between Worlds.
Yep.
I thought, great, I'm gonna transfer my 3DS to this thing, and then I just didn't do it for a while. Then this new 3DS thing got announced, and I felt like it wasn't going to be worth my while to either keep it to sell it or transfer to it when I'm going to probably buy this thing next year anyway. So I was like, hey, Vink, do you want a 3DS?
And so you're going to the next best thing, and you're unloading your old crap on me.
That's
thank
right.
You. Totally, thank you. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
So have you gotten Gakuten Saiban yet?
No, because I don't know. Like, if it was still
come on.
If it was still on sale, okay. If it was still on sale, that would be the thing. But it's $30. I'm willing to wait up to 20 years to get it for $15.
Oh, dear.
It's one of those things that I really want to play it. No, the candle's out. I'm still holding a candle for a possible future physical release, but it's just not happening, is it?
No, I doubt it. But you know, this does remind me. You got a copy because I made sure that I sent one to you, but I got a copy of Smash Brothers for 3DS.
Yes.
Also.
Nice.
And it was actually a gift from Phil Bond because it was my birthday. Well, probably about a month ago by the time this podcast comes out. And there was some debate if I should get a digital copy or not. Not by me, of course, because we know our proclivity listens to the podcast. Let's just say there was an opportunity to force a digital copy on me. He didn't take it.
Okay.
So...
physical cartridges all the way.
Yeah.
Preserving our gaming heritage.
So that's what I have.
Unless they're $15.
Pretty much.
Then screw history. Okay.
I hope your SD card's big enough. I don't remember what size the stock one is.
It was four gigs in it. I mean, I've got Link Between Worlds on it and a whole bunch of demos, and it's more than half full, but by the way, demos, awesome. We'll get into that more.
Sure.
But even me, I'm like wondering how long I can hold out until the new 3DS, which plays Xenoblade,
right,
comes out. And it hurts more that I just picked one up for one of our dear listeners. Or whatever, they forwarded me some money to pick one up, and then they sold out like very shortly after, and I'm just sitting there going, maybe I should just keep this one. No, but I mean I sent it out and Looks really cute. More it's, powerful, faster.
It's bigger than I thought too. Brian Ashcraft posted a bunch of pictures. It's like 50% bigger than the original 3DS screen. Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, the screen's bigger. The actual unit itself is about the same size.
Well, it's a smidge bigger, you know. It seems like it's halfway between. Well, there's an XL, but wasn't the XL here, or the LL. Oh. He was showing the regular size one, but it's like halfway between like the original and the XL.
It's weird going back to the original after playing the XL because I'm street passing myself for my Japanese one, and I go and I'm like, look at that little tiny cute little screen.
It's adorable,
but it looks way higher def because it's smaller. So
right, it probably does look sharper. But I mean, hey, how about a first world problem here? We have to wait. Because it's region locked. So two first world problems. Region locked, and we have to wait because it's not out in the States yet.
Wow. You know, there's a lot of first world problems going on in gaming. There really, really are.
Isn't gaming a first world hobby in the first place?
I guess, yeah. Although with all the Hong Kong bootlegs and things, I think some people in developing economies are getting into it now.
Right.
But gosh, what can I say? I was reading forums the other day. When I say forums, it's almost always NeoGAF. I should point that out.
Yeah, I figured that out a while ago.
I read a couple other forums. I do. And I don't mean to be buzz marketing NeoGAF here, but, there it is. I do read a couple. I mean, I read other forums, but that's the one I read the most. So, and, there was a topic a few days ago about I don't know if it was everywhere in the world or just Europe, but they were updating the what is it, the EALU thing, the end user, what am I looking for?
EULA.
That's it. You know, that agreement. And basically they said you had to agree to this or you couldn't play any games.
Right.
You know, and they made these huge threads about it, like they don't give you the option to not agree to it. But like once you download the new update, you have to hit the agree button or just turn your system off. Either way, until you agree to it, you can't play games.
Awesome.
Now, yeah, that's kind of draconian. But like, and I mean, and people were like, I can't believe this. I can't believe Nintendo's doing this. But, you know, both of the other consoles, Nintendo and Sony, have something in their agreement that once you've agreed to it one time, you continually agree to it for the future. So they don't pop up those boxes because by using the console, you are agreeing to it. And it's up to the onus is on the user actually to go to Sony's website and see if they've changed anything. That's crazy. But either way, I do like 99.9% of the people in the world and don't read it at all. It just click so I can play my games. Do you read those?
No, never.
No, I mean, nobody does. And really the thing is, I doubt they would be legally binding anyway. You know what I mean? Hmm. You're not signing anything. You're clicking on a box, you know, and, I mean, they'd probably give if you had a case against Nintendo for what exactly? That's the other thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm too trusting of corporations. I know a lot of people will claim that I am, but I don't really think Nintendo is going to try to do anything particularly evil to me beyond the evil things they've already done.
Oh goodness!
Region locking.
Well, how about this
disaster day of crisis? Yeah, what are they going to do if I agree to this? Are they going to continue to not localize Fatal Frame? Ooh.
Well, here's one thing that they did do. What happened when you first put in your copy of Smash Brothers for 3DS?
It made me update.
You couldn't even play the game without a mandatory update.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
So think about this. In the future, if someone has a 3DS or buys one used, and they buy a copy of Smash Brothers, and the 3DS online services are no longer available. They put this game in, can't play it. Sorry.
No, actually, I think that one might be okay. I do believe that update came from the card itself. And not the...
Doesn't... Why? What? Because
a lot of the Wii U discs have updates right on the disc.
What?
Yeah. This has been the policy for...
What's the point of that? Why not... What?
What do you mean?
What? If it's done...
Oh, sorry. You're talking about the Smash update. I had an OS update when I first put in Smash.
Oh.
And that was on the disc. That was on the card itself. Oh, yeah. But no. I was able to play Smash before I downloaded the update because I wasn't near Wi-Fi when I first... Well, actually, I was near Wi-Fi, but I hadn't set it up yet.
Okay.
No. I was able to skip through, but I guess it's a more tuned experience if you download that patch. I didn't download that patch till a few days later.
Okay. I may have seen a video. that's all I'll say right now.
Yeah. That'll be up soon. Yeah. By the way, videos coming soon. Remember those? It's like the podcast, but with pictures.
And shorter. Much shorter.
Much shorter, yeah. Much rarer, yes.
Yes.
It's like a metal slime.
Yeah. You gotta use a master ball to catch these.
What?
Huh?
Dragon Warrior reference.
I went to Pokemon, so what? Man,
you know what?
I don't care.
I'm so frustrated that you did that.
Yeah.
And that's my first world problem right
now. Oh, jeez. Okay.
So,
well, I mean, we're talking about Smash Brothers, right?
Yes.
I just saw something.
Can I give you my review of Smash Brothers?
Oh, yeah,
like
sure.
You'll like this one.
Okay.
Like this one.
Yeah.
Smash Brothers is to the Smash Brothers series as Quake 3 Arena is to the Quake series.
I don't know. Do I like that? I'm not sure what that means.
Quake 3 Arena was a really, really good game, right?
Sure.
A lot of people liked it.
Yeah.
Maybe the most popular in the series.
Okay.
Very well made, very well done. But I never particularly enjoyed it because there was absolutely no single player campaign.
Uh-huh.
Smash doesn't have a story mode.
Right.
I knew it didn't have a subspace emissary or whatever that thing was from last one, which I loved, by the way. I enjoyed that despite the play control. But
yeah,
they don't have anything. It's just battle after battle after battle. So I think I'm going to enjoy it a lot more when I finally start getting online and playing with some people. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, we haven't played together yet. I don't think I've played with anyone online except for a couple of ranked matches with random people.
But I was just absolutely surprised by how incredibly bare bones single player it was, though. You know, I expected at least something, you know?
I was okay with it. I mean, I don't remember there being much of a story aside from Subspace Emissary in the first place.
Yeah, I guess. When I first actually had some time to do it, it was during a lunch break at work, and I didn't have Wi-Fi. I didn't have any internet.
Right.
So I'm playing it, and I'm like, it's Smash, you know, but smaller, you know.
Have you had any problems with your circle pad falling off yet?
I have not. I'm gentle. I wrap this. I don't have a case for this yet, so I wrap it in a fukusa, which is like a Japanese large handkerchief.
Sure.
And pack it lovingly in my bag.
Sure.
My precious.
It looks like it's solid gold. It's pretty rad.
It does. I'm enjoying it. So my problem with Smash Brothers is I want a single player thing because I don't have any friends.
No. Maybe the Wii version will have something.
Well, I don't know. That's kind of a mystery still. Like we knew it was a known thing that the 3DS version wasn't going to have a story mode, and it's known that Wii U version isn't going to have, a giant thing like Subspace from Brawl. But what's not known is whether it's going to have like any boss battles or anything else, or if that stuff might be able to be downloaded later.
Right. Oh, I'm sure this is going to be DLC crazy. If you're Mario Kart 8's any indication.
Do you know? I was just thinking back to Brawl. Man, Brawl had a lot of stuff in it, didn't it? I mean, think about it. It had that whole Subspace Emissary thing, and then it had like the whole virtual console versions of all the games people were from, but with like a 5-minute time limit or something.
Did it?
Do you remember that?
Yeah. No.
Yes. Because they were trying to get you to buy them on the virtual console, all the games that were in it. So they had like, I think they pretty much had the whole game in, but they were time limited to 5 minutes. And there was a controversy because they didn't put Earthbound in there.
Oh,
but well, they did in the Japanese version.
Well, now Earthbound's out on the Wii U virtual console, so that's crazy. No, I didn't know about that.
By the way, I am very, very, very bad at Smash. I really need to learn how to play.
Well, I mean, is it because the controls are weird? Because you can remap those. I did.
Maybe. I am used to it on a GameCube controller, but even then, I was never particularly great at it. So I always got it because of the fan service and everything. You know, it's just crazy how many, you know, familiar characters are there, and I liked collecting the little trophies and stuff. Well,
here's a question for you then. I mean, yeah. are you going to get the bundle with the adapter and the GameCube controller? I'm assuming Japan, or actually no, you're going to get one for the US copy. So yeah, I guess you'd be able to get a US one. I am, but
that's a very good question. I'm still thinking about it because I have a lot of GameCube controllers.
Right? It's like, I don't need the GameCube controller. I could probably just buy the adapter separately, but I kind of want one anyway.
But I kind of thought it would be a really good chance for me to finally get, like, the Controller Pro. I don't have one yet.
Oh, sure.
I just have GamePad, and I hear it's a really, really good control experience. And since I haven't played Smash enough that everything's in muscle memory, you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's not tuned my brain that much, you know? So I think I could get used to another controller.
Okay.
So
yeah, I remapped my buttons because I'm used to the A button being in the middle and then the B to the left and then one of the jump buttons being to the right, being X in this case. So I remapped my buttons to be my attack button is B and I jump with A and I do the B moves with Y. Don't judge me.
This is tearing me up inside.
But I mean,
my first world problem.
This seems to be cut and dried, right? Just get this GameCube controller. But I saw a Hori officially licensed Mario GameCube pad, which confused me because it said Wii on it, and I was like, all right. So I went and read the description on Amazon, and apparently it plugs into a Wii remote, which means it's not really a GameCube pad.
No, but it would probably work on both.
Well, I mean, it would work. It would work on Smash Brothers for sure, and it would work on a Wii, but it wouldn't work on a GameCube because it's not the right adapter.
You saw that pad I showed you—the official Nintendo Super Famicom pad for Virtual Console.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same deal.
Same deal. Same deal. It plugs into the Wii remote.
So I mean, this is what got me thinking. It's like, all right. So Hori's got this thing. What are the advantages? One of them being you don't have to get the GameCube adapter. If you have a Wii remote, you're good. It works on your Wii stuff. So it's basically just a classic controller Pro. Has all the same buttons, all the same sticks.
Do the analog triggers work? Probably not.
It doesn't seem like they are analog. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
It's like shaped like a GameCube controller, but it's not really a GameCube controller.
I mean, Hori makes good stuff. It might actually be better than a GameCube controller, but I don't know. My thought on that is you have a bunch of GameCube controllers, right? Still?
Oh, I have a full quiver of just let me think for a second. I have at least 3 wired ones, and I definitely have 3 Waybirds. So okay. I have like a quiver and a half.
Well, I mean, in that case, it makes much more sense for you to get the adapter because if you get the Hori pad, it's just one pad. It's just yours.
Right.
But if you want to have friends over to play with equal controllers, you probably should get the adapter.
Well, and that's one of the drawbacks, which is that you need – it's still wireless because it's going through your remote. Yeah. You need 4 of them running actively on batteries to use 4 of these things, even though only $25.
Really? That's cheap.
Right? I still want to get one. Here's the positive thing.
Yeah.
That Zach pointed out. It'll work on games that aren't Smash Brothers on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Because it's not really a GameCube controller.
Correct. It's just button mapping. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if this thing has stick clicks or not.
Ooh.
Because if it does, then it's basically just a pro controller.
Yeah, not sure.
Right. We'll have to get one and find out. November 21st is when these come out.
Yeah, just buy one.
Just buy one. Just so I'm gonna have two controllers I don't need just to have them. What a first world problem to have.
Well, I mean, okay. I think we've established our theme. We should probably stop saying it.
Right okay.
Now. But yeah, I'm very guilty of it earlier in the cast. Yeah, we're talking about first world problems today. We're coming up with lists of like things that really are not issues, but just absolutely. Well, I mean, things we're thinking about. So, you want to go into the big one or do a couple small ones first?
Oh, dear. We went through a lot of them so far. Let's do some smaller ones. Yeah, well, we'll save my big issue for last.
Okay. I have too many games now, and they're hard to organize.
I mean, not only is this a first world problem, it's like a collector problem.
Yeah. Not all games are hard to organize. Gosh, Dreamcast games are really easy. They have very universal labels. Mm. The only ones that are weird are like Cosmic Smash and stuff, which came in a DVD-style case. And some of the collector's editions did some weird stuff. But in general, they're pretty easy to organize. Saturn's the same way. What I have problem with is Nintendo. For three whole console generations, they just basically made it like, you'll never need to organize these things. Famicom, no side labels except for some third-party games like Konami. Konami, thank you. Thank you for putting side labels on. I like that. Up, up, down, down. Okay, anyway. I enjoy that, which because Konami always did that on their MSX games, and MSX games for the majority had side labels, which was great. They're the same size as a Famicom cartridge about, so I really don't see why Nintendo decided to not have them. But it makes it really, really, really hard to organize. Shops as well. Pretty much have to have everything on hooks so you can see the front label, because if they just put them in a normal type of shelf, you have to dig through every single cart to find the one you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
My organization system right now is I'm color coding them, which is a little difficult considering I'd say you're almost half of the cartridges are black.
Right.
So, but if it's like an orange cart, it's very easy for me to find the game, and I do memorize what color they are. I don't know why that sticks in my brain, but other important things don't. But
anniversary.
Oh yeah, I'm married. Anyway,
no, not for much longer.
But then when it got to Super Famicom, it got worse, not better. Because now they still don't have side labels on the cartridges, and all of them are the same color. Not in mine. A lot of them have yellowed.
Still, that's not deliberate.
But they all started the same color.
Well, I mean, what's worse to me about this is that the NES and Super NES games had these, but then you get to N64 and Nintendo's all like, hey, we're going to have one universal standard, one name for the console, one everything. And that included one set of cartridges that did not have side labels.
Yep.
So it was the first time in the US. It was a step backwards.
But I don't know. I mean, in Nintendo's defense, I mean, look at it. They knew what their third-party support was going to be, and they knew no one was going to own more than three or four games for this thing anyway, because there weren't going to be enough. So there was no need to have a large collection organized. So,
well, what about this, huh? CDs would have had no side labels either because, no sides.
Yeah. cases.
Cases. The case is right. Okay.
And that's why, like, Genesis cartridges. Did Genesis games have side labels in the States?
No. Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. They typically did not, like, the Mega Drive ones did.
Yeah.
But
it's not such an issue because you know, they had the snap lock cases, which wouldn't get destroyed. But Nintendo had paper boxes, which just, as a kid, you know, those got completely destroyed. So as a collector now, you know, it's hard. Well, okay, I'm looking at some Mega Drive cartridges right now, and they've got side labels. So I don't know what the Genesis ones were. I can't remember it. I don't have one.
Oh, just hold on a second. I'll be right back.
Whew, he's gone. Okay. So now that he's not listening, I think we should plan a surprise party for Sean. Okay. Now, details we'll work out later. I'm not actually sure when his birthday is, but when it is, I think we should surprise him. Let's all come up with some ideas and we'll figure out a way to make this really, really memorable. Okay.
Okay, I take it back. Genesis did. It's just that they're shaped differently.
Ho, ho, ho. Genesis does what Nintendo don't.
Oh, man. You're just waiting to bust that one out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at the SG-1000 carts I have with no working system to play them on, and they have them.
Yep, they've got side labels.
The Master System games do. The 32X ones don't.
Really?
At least the one that I have.
Huh.
And then after that, we go to disc, so.
Super Cassette Vision cartridges had side labels.
Man.
Like pretty much everything except Nintendo.
You know, Game Boy games never had side labels, but you didn't really feel like I needed them.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have as many Game Boy cartridges, and I don't keep my DS or Game Boy Advance games in cases either. So it's not like,
You know, I mean,
why isn't that a problem? I guess they're just smaller.
I keep my DS games in their cases, but I don't know. Like, and it's driving me nuts because now I've got this huge, huge collection, and it's very, especially if I'm looking for a Super Famicom game. I mean, I put my best stuff in the front.
Yeah.
Now, but like when I'm trying to discover a lost classic, it's not. I have too many games. Yeah, poor me. Everybody's sitting there with their podcast going, "Oh, poor Kevin. He has so many games. He can't find what he's looking for." But I will give it to Nintendo for one of theirs. Famicom Disk System with the Obies side labels. Very easy. Yes. Very easy to organize. Very easy to know. And a lot of people tell me I should alphabetize them. And with my old collection, I did have them alphabetized. But it's hard to know exactly what you want to, how you want to do it, because often the Japanese titles and English titles are different. You can't really alphabetize Japanese games so well. You can do it with the Japanese alphabetization system, which is A, I, U, A, O, Ka, Ki, Ku, Ke, Ko, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that, but I don't know. I got to think about that all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm right now, bicolor is pretty fast, but I need to find a better solution for Super Famicom and N64, because those right now I just have them in stacks. Label blank stacks.
But pretty rainbow colored stacks.
No, my Super Famicom.
Oh, sorry, Super Famicom. Sorry, Super. Pretty gray and yellow stacks.
Yeah. Yeah, those gray and yellow, the very definition of pretty.
Or jaundiced, I forget which.
At least in America, you had the couple, you had the weird things like the red carts for that one LGN game that apparently is pretty good.
Spider-Man and Carnage or something. Yeah.
And I think Doom.
Killer Instinct was black.
Killer Instinct was black. I'm sure there's a gold Zelda cart.
No,
there wasn't. That was the system that didn't get the gold card.
Oh my gosh, that's right. It was just the label.
Really?
I didn't think about that. Because
I know there was a gold disc for GameCube. There was a gold...
Right.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Well, the Game Boy game also had a gold label but no cartridge. Wow. Wow. And then, like, the DX version was black.
Yep.
Huh.
Why is there no gold labeled cartridge for Zelda? It ruins my collection.
Well, you know, N64, you know, they had two Zelda games, and they were both gold cartridges.
Interestingly enough, my download of Wind Waker was gold. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about my thing.
All right, let's talk about your important dilemma. All right. Now, if you've been following our Twitter, which you should, I guess, if you're into that, you'll know that I had previously talked Sean out of getting a PlayStation 4. Do you want to give a rundown of how that went?
Sure. I mean, I'm still getting one, but he basically pointed out to me that there's nothing I can play on a PS4 that I can't play like on a PC, for instance, or in the case of some multi-platform titles on other consoles, or even games that were on other consoles before they did like a remastered version. Yep. So basically the only thing that I really want to play on a PS4 that I can't on like my Xbox 360 is The Last of Us, which I could play on the PS3 if I had one.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, that's a good point. I should probably just wait. And then he tells me you should wait until Black Friday.
There will be deals.
And I was like, that is great. Well, I have a conundrum now.
All right. Tell me your first world problem.
I was going
stop saying that. Okay.
I was going to wait. But then a lot of Dragon Age Inquisition stuff's been out lately. Everything that I've read leads me to believe that you will not be able to port your saves directly. Not only not from one platform to another, not even from Dragon Age 2 on the same platform to Inquisition.
That's lame.
Yeah, everything
You'd
goes.
You think with all the cloud stuff, that would be cake.
Well, I mean, they're putting a lot of resources into the Dragon Age Keep.
Yeah.
But I guess just the time it would take to import anything at all at this point, they're just not going to bother with it.
I don't know. It does not seem like that would be that much work. I mean, we're not asking them to make a female playable character. We're just asking,
which there are.
Yeah, but.
Well, it's more like this, right? Like if everything is going through Keep, then that means all these old versions have to go through Keep too, which means a patch for every single previous platform release.
I can see that, but couldn't they just do the one right before it? Because, I mean, the people it's going to affect most are people who have been Dragon Aging through the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I don't think they'd have to support all the previous games. I think just the direct prequel.
I guess, but those decisions are saved in your Dragon Age 2 file if you've imported from the first game. But yeah, that's a good point, I guess. Maybe they just don't want to care about all the infinite decisions that they made you make in the Heaven story. I don't know what the deal is, but
the best thing about Dragon Wars was I was able to import my Bard's Tale characters.
What? There.
Dragon Wars?
Nope.
One of the first big titles by Interplay right after Battle Chess.
Nope.
It was made by a bunch of people who were originally on Bard's Tale.
Uh-huh.
You know Bard's Tale.
I never played it myself. I played Battle Chess.
Okay. Bard's Tale, very excellent Western first person RPG.
Okay.
Fantastic. It was up there with the Ultima series in my mind. As just you were an Apple II gamer. How did you miss this one?
It was an early Apple II gamer.
That it's early. It's very early.
I don't know.
The first one was 86, maybe.
Most of the games I played were like action games or like ports of arcade games. Okay. And I think the one exception was the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Infocom game.
Okay.
So,
well, I'll tell you what. If you have any interest at all, and you should, they're great games. They have the Bard's Tale game that came out on the PlayStation 2. It was not a remake.
Ah, so it classic was... Apple.
No. I'm getting there.
Okay.
It was in like 2004 or something. I don't know when it came out. By In Exile Entertainment, which bought the rights to the name. Now, recently they ported it to all kinds of stuff: iPad, Steam, just a ton of different things. And the new update for it included all three Apple II Bard's Tale games.
Okay,
right on there, and an Apple emulator. They're emulated from the Apple versions.
Okay,
and. So if you buy that Bard's Tale game, which is like $10 for the new Bard's Tale, which is great, it's a musical.
What?
Really? You missed this one altogether?
Yeah, I never really.
In Exile Entertainment has, they've been getting a lot of publicity lately because they re-kickstarted, that's not the right word for it. They brought back the Wasteland series. You heard of Wasteland, right?
Nope.
Have you heard of Fallout?
Yes.
Fallout is a spiritual sequel to Wasteland.
Okay.
But, you know, Fallout went a slightly different direction, and now Fallout's this third-person game that's probably really good, but not the style Kevin likes.
Okay.
So Wasteland goes back to kind of the roots of the series. Yeah, so Wasteland 2's out. It's pretty cool. And it comes with a copy of the Bard's Tale, which comes with a copy of the three Apple II Bard's Tale games.
Oh, good grief. Okay.
everything's connected in this world. Okay. So back to my original point, being able to move a character from one game to the other is super, super sweet.
Yes. So I'm not so much upset about this. I'm getting Dragon Age anyway. The thing is, though, is that there's... exclusive pre-order content, and it comes out in about a month, at least from when we're recording this, so probably about 2 weeks by the time that this is out. So yeah. I could pre-order it now and not play it until who knows when, but is that really going to happen? Probably not. I'm going to want a PS4 before then. So that's one problem. Second problem, I got worried I wouldn't actually be able to find a PS4 on Black Friday.
You know, if so, that's the type of problem that Sony wants to have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's not a problem I want to have.
Well, I understand, but I really don't think the supply chain is going to be that strained at second Christmas.
I don't live anywhere anymore that is as well stocked as other places I used to live. I have maybe two options within. Without driving over half an hour.
Okay.
Somewhere. So there's that. And then there's the whole moral conundrum of shopping on Black Friday at all.
Moral conundrum?
Yeah, because people like they keep pushing the opening day back and back and back until it like encroaches onto Thanksgiving itself. So people are like going into stores at like noon on Thanksgiving Day to prepare for Black Friday.
Well, you don't have to be that guy, right?
Well, if I go, then I'm that guy.
Well, you can go not camping out the day before.
Well, no, but they're still there to be open and ready for that day.
Okay.
Anyway, so then you know all the deals will be gone anyway. So between those two things, I don't feel like this is going to be a good plot for me.
What about Cyber Monday?
There's that, I suppose. I mean, I can see what's out there, but I don't want to buy a console online. It just seems wrong. I did do one thing online, though, because my local Best Buy didn't have a copy. I might have bought Injustice from Amazon, and it should be here on Tuesday.
I forgive you. Yes, if that's what you're looking for. I... So you don't think you're going to be able to wait for the Dragon Age box.
Right. And now that I'm going to have Injustice in just a couple of days, I'm probably going to want to play it.
Okay. I guess it, and that's exactly why it is a first world problem. For me, I'd wait because it saves like $50. But I'm also the person who's not.
We don't know what the deals are, though. I mean, what do I want? I want Dragon Age, which I got a pre-order if I want to get the stupid extra whatever the heck comes with it.
Now that's the problem with our gaming industry,
right?
I mean, that's the big problem right there. Is the having to buy it right away. To get DLC is the problem. DLC in general is the problem.
Well, I mean, both Dragon Age games came with some kind of DLC incentive like that. So I don't remember for sure which one came. I think it was the Shale character DLC, which and the missions that go with that. I didn't realize it at the time. I had to actually input a code, and then Dragon Age 2 came with. Don't remember.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Yeah. If you don't pre-order it, there's no other way to get this DLC?
I don't know. I mean, it could be a time-exclusive thing. It could be a thing I have to pay for later.
I think very, very few DLC has ever been totally exclusive to a pre-order bonus.
Right. So if you buy a game at GameStop and it gives you a specific skin, then that eventually becomes available, possibly for free later on.
Yeah.
True. So there's that. And then the other thing is Destiny.
Really?
I played the beta. I was able to get into the beta, and I enjoyed it. That's when I realized it was an MMO, and I was okay with that at first. But since then, since it's been out, people have been talking about it, and I'm not looking forward to the grinds, the lack of endgame content, or just playing an MMO in general anymore, because I did that for a long time.
I can understand how you'd be hyped before Destiny came out, but it's out. The reviews are out, and it's not the next big thing.
Right.
For me, I didn't give in to the hype at the beginning either. It always looked bad to me, but
well, I mean, it's
just
very,
because of its genre. Yeah.
It's very much a Bungie game. You know, there's the style, even the animations from Halo are like very much present.
Yeah. But I don't know. The reviews basically say it doesn't feel Bungie enough. You know what I mean? Like,
and that doesn't bother. I mean, I played it, you know, but I can see what kind of where the seams would end up being.
Yeah.
Especially having played the MMO for a number of years, and I'm just like, I really don't want to get back into that. And I'm not looking forward to the day, if I do enjoy it, that it gets shut off on me because the servers go down. So
exactly.
First world problems.
So for my situation, because it may get shut down someday, it's better for me to just never play it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I might never go back to it at this point.
Well, I don't know. It definitely didn't do as well for Bungie as Bungie thought it was going to do for them, critically or sales wise. So I don't know how much of a future it has. I mean, they had planned all this tons and tons of DLC for it, but if people are already kind of, you know, abandoning ship, you know, a lot of those plans may never come to fruition.
Right. Without the monthly subscription model that most MMOs have, if they don't pay for DLC, then they're kind of hosed.
Well, I also don't like that. It apparently just seems to be a roll of the dice what drops you get and things like that, so that the amount of actual skill you have in the game doesn't really trade in so much as luck or just sheer determination to play for a certain number of hours.
Right. So we'll see. Maybe people will convince me, but basically my biggest problem, I think, if I did get it, was that everyone I know is going to be on one of the Xbox platforms.
Yeah, well, you gonna buy a one just for that?
Nope. I want to play Last of Us.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna buy a PS3 just for that.
I mean, that's the thing, though. I guess it really depends on. Now, a Black Friday deal could be very, very nice. You know what I mean? It could be a couple games thrown in. It could be 50 or 100 bucks off the cost of the console. You know, right. It's hard to know exactly what they're going to do. They always do something, though. Right. And I guess it depends if you feel that it's worth your money to go to spend the extra amount of money or leave those games on the table now in order to play it now. I guess that's very reasonable.
Maybe I can get a deal on the PlayStation Plus or something and like a controller. I don't know.
The thing is, and this is something that gets to me sometimes. Let's say that this generation is, let's go very conservative. We'll say it's only 5 years long, this console generation. It's probably going to be longer, but let's just say it's 5 years. Now, a lot of people are saying that the Wii is overpriced right now. And it might be. It might be, considering the technology that's in it. But like, if you buy a Wii for like $300, which right now is probably bundled with two games, you know.
Digital games.
No, a lot of them are like the 3D World bundle and the Mario Kart bundle. They were physical. So
I guess sure, because I've been okay.
The Zelda bundle was digital.
Okay.
I don't know. Some of the bundles are digital and some of them are physical. Nintendo Land was just a code for a lot of the bundles, but some of them still have the disc. I don't know. I think Nintendo's still trying to figure out what they want to do with this.
Hmm.
Speaking of which, I can't find my Nintendo Land disc anywhere.
Uh-oh.
It's troubling me because now I really want to play it again. Oh, well. And my brother just chimed in. He's like, ha-ha, should have gone digital. Then you'd be able to play it. And then I'm like, yeah, but then you wouldn't be able to be borrowing all the games from me that you're borrowing. You know what
I mean? Right. You know?
So, I don't know. Anyway, the thing is, that's a... I don't know. But.
All right. Future retro?
I'm just trying to think if I ever want to get a PS4.
Oh.
Like, I decided.
I'll let you know.
I decided last year that I wanted to get one, but I can't for the life of me think of any reason for it right now.
I'll have it for an experience that I wouldn't be able to get because I'm not going to spend money on a PS3 just to play Last of Us. I'll have it to play Dragon Age, which I could get for 360, but since there's no incentive for me to do so, I won't.
I gotta say though, in the future, as you go along, you should pick yourself up a PS3 to get the games you missed.
We'll see. I mean, I think a lot of the ones I'm going to want to play are going to make it over in some fashion at some point.
Like, you know, I wasn't an Xbox fan.
Right.
I mean, you know that, but I eventually picked up a 360 because, you know, now that the generation's pretty much over, I don't want to miss out. And the games will go up in price once the system's been fully discontinued, you know. So
well, here's my thing right now is that there are so many older games that I own and haven't played that I don't really feel like I need to add to that by buying a console. I already don't own.
And so you're going to get a PS4.
All right. This is transitioning pretty well into future retro, I think.
All right. Let's do it. Let's do this. You want to start?
Sure. So one of those games is a GameCube game. I think we know where I'm going with this. I finally did it.
Ooh.
Finally did it.
Oh, wow. New episode of Famicom Dojo.
Well, that too, but... No. This is the second instance of a game from the pile of shame moving to Future Retro.
Congratulations.
Yes. I finally finished Metroid Prime 2.
Oh, that's cute.
Ugh.
No, it's great because you're such a big Metroid fan,
right? And that's what got me started was I was going through the Game Boy games, and I started thinking about the Prime series again. I put in Prime 2, and I was like, why did I stop playing this game? And so I started from the beginning to find out the answer to that question.
Okay, so So how was it? How does it stack up?
Hold on a second. Well, I like it. I do like it. It's very different from Prime 1. I don't want to say better, but it's different in a way that a Metroid game I think needed to be at the time, okay. Especially because the Game Boy games were coming out around the same time. So, you know, the analogies I'm thinking of are like Prime was kind of like Super Metroid, and then Prime 2 is kind of like Fusion.
Okay.
And Prime 3, which well, I'll get to that, is what. Well, I guess we'll see. But Prime 2, I had a really hard time separating memories of Prime 1 from it. So things I was thinking of, the memories I was having trying to figure out why I stopped playing this game were actually from Prime 1.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like there were levels I remembered, you know, being like in Dark Aether and tooling around there, and I remember not liking it that much. And I still didn't like it this time either, but I kind of soldiered on and eventually got to a point where it wasn't as cumbersome to deal with that stuff. But I remember now thinking that having this dark world, which so many games use as a trope, and then, you know, Link Between Worlds, yeah. Which you just got,
yeah.
Relives that from a previous game.
Yes.
A totally different dark world, but... still, you know, it's an easy way to double your map size without having as much effort to do so.
Very true.
Basically. But, you know, it ends up happening in really interesting ways later on in the game. So unless you traverse the dark world, you can't get through certain parts in the light world, and then you unlock them, and then it makes kind of all makes sense. But you still have to kind of backtrack in a way along the same map you've already go to in the light world. And then in the light world, you have to backtrack anyway to get weapons after you unlock the last couple of power-ups that, you know, basically I got obsessed with what this Denzium stuff was. I was scanning everywhere and why I couldn't blow through it and what weapon that must be to use it. And I learned it was it's something you don't get until near the end of the game, basically. So it was just this constant taunting that made me stop playing the game and all the backtracking. That's why I stopped. It had less to do with the fall of 2007 and the rise of the Xbox 360 than I thought. Because I had Metroid Prime 3 at that time. I bought it and I picked it up and I opened it up and started playing it for like 5 minutes. And before I was like, no, I have to play Prime 2. And I had already not played it for at least a couple of years by that point.
I really need to play Other M.
I don't know. I'm going to Prime 3 now. I'm not going to play Other M.
You're not going to play Other M.
I am. I started playing that after I finished Skyward Sword.
It's not that I know a lot of the criticism about the plot of Other M. I know, but I want to play another 2D Metroid. I just like 2D Metroid.
It's not a 2D Metroid though.
It's a 2D Metroid. which has like point at the screen occasional 3D moments. I can deal with that.
It's not.
It's a two button Metroid.
All right.
You can play with the Wii controller on its side. It's not a 3D Metroid.
Fine. Yes, that's true, and that's what attracted me to it in the first place. But it's not quite like that. Anyway, well, you know, I'll get back to it eventually, possibly before you do, and I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah. Probably.
So, what's your future retro?
I also am taking one off the pile of shame today. I am taking off a game that I am embarrassed to say that I haven't beat yet.
Okay.
And that is Chibi Robo. The reason I'm embarrassed about it is because I've met the guys from Skip twice, and I have an autographed copy of Chibi Robo, and I have the soundtrack for Chibi. But it's just a game that I never really had time for. It's one that I thought was whimsical and fun, but I don't know why I never really like gave it a serious play. Well, now my daughter really enjoys watching me play video games, but I have to be careful of what I play. You know, it needs to be something light and fun, something visually interesting. So role players are out, but also something very appropriate for children to watch, you know.
Right.
And Pikmin was great. My daughter loves Pikmin and watching me play through Pikmin. So I almost put Pikmin 1 on my future retro today, but I haven't beat it yet, so I'm gonna wait on that get a final approval.
Okay.
So I've been playing. So I played Dora the Explorer, Purple Planet something, which was not too bad actually, and added to my list of games I've beat. So there we go.
Nice.
Oh.
if you were playing the 360 just to get the E-Wing points, then I might.
Yeah. Yeah. More sense. No. My daughter really liked it, and it was. It was cute, and part of it she could play by herself, which she really enjoyed, but there were still some jumps. Jumps are hard for her still.
Sure.
But anyway, Chibi Robo is wonderful. It's adorable. It's not Katamari Damacy, and it doesn't play like Katamari Damacy, but it has that kind of feeling to it. Because you're this small little thing in I don't know, and everything's kind of drawn in a colorful but somewhat simplistic style, and there's a lot of like household environments. It's funny. It's a really funny game. The story is pretty hilarious. You have this one girl who pretty much believes herself to be a frog, and I you know what? Just play it. People who haven't played it, played it. And because I was getting into that, I also downloaded the demo for Photo Finder, Chibi Robo Photo Finder.
Yeah, right.
And I'd rather have another Chibi Robo game.
Yeah, well.
But it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. I think one of the reasons I never got into Chibi Robo is it seemed all the sequels went to portable. And I actually played the DS Chibi Robo, and it was fun, but it was more of like flower planting and stuff like that, and it was fun, but it didn't draw me in. The first game, though, it's really good, and I can see why it has such a cult following.
Well, I actually was the one who picked that up for you when we went to Tokyo Game Show that year, and when I did that, it was a used copy, and it was the only one I found, so I had to thunder through as much as that I could before I brought it with me and left it with you. And I hadn't played it before, even though it seemed like a really good kind of game I wanted to play when the GameCube was out, but I just, you know, never did. And it's kind of pricey still, so I didn't save myself any money by waiting. But
it's going up too. It's not going down, yeah.
That's the frustrating thing. They only had the one copy at the store that I went to, and I haven't seen it since. And so I'm glad that you finally played it, basically, 3 years later.
Now, they did a new Play Control Chibi Robo, didn't they? But I know it came out in Japan, but did it come out in the States?
Not that I'm aware of.
Maybe it didn't. It came out in Japan. So the price isn't super high for Chibi Robo here because it got the Wii make, you know. But I don't know if that one ever hit stateside. And Chibi Robo 2, the portable Chibi Robo 2, I think it's called like Chibi Robo Flower or something, is super expensive in the States because it's a Walmart exclusive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so getting into the series right now is a little expensive, but the first game, really, everyone should try it. And I'm hoping that Photo Finder does well enough that they do another Chibi Robo on the 3DS, because I think the 3DS works really well for Chibi Robo.
Okay.
So, or Wii U with the gamepad, please skip.
Oh, yeah.
Skip. You might actually be listening to this.
We'll send you a copy. We'll send you a link to the show.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, the guys from Skip, nicest guys we've ever met, I think. God,
they were so cool. They were super styling.
Yeah. They were awesome. We met them. We mentioned it in the podcast, but met them for Tokyo Game Show a couple of years ago, and really should keep in touch better. Oof.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's a good transition into Pile of Shame.
Pile of Shame. Shame, shame. My Pile of Shame this month is not, this year is not keeping in touch with Skip better. You want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. So I mentioned Metroid Prime 2.
Yep.
Metroid Prime 3 is my Pile of Shame.
Now, you just said you were going to play that.
Well, here's my problem.
Okay.
I didn't play the remakes of the Prime series.
Okay.
So I played my GameCube copy. You know, my old GameCube controller stuck my GameCube. Wait, sorry. My old GameCube memory card stuck my GameCube controller into my Wii. Played it that way because I could get progressive scan without having to pay $215 minimum for a component cable for my GameCube.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah. Prime 2 was still gorgeous. It controlled the way I remembered. Not really a fan of the Wii controls in Prime 3.
Really?
It has something to do with the way that I maybe just take some practice, but like the way I hold the controller, you know, I have to constantly remember to keep it pointed at the screen to stay centered. So like, you know, if it gets to it, like a spot where it's like a little cutscene or something, I like might turn my controller away. Yeah. And the moment I do, I'm like looking down to the corner somewhere. And also left-handed. So I tend to hold the Wii remote in my left hand. So if I hold it the way I'm supposed to with the remote in my right hand, then the move sticks on my left, and it's basically like the GameCube controls, but you know, with motion for the look, for the look stick essentially. And that actually makes a lot of sense. If I just got to try, I'm going to try it, but, I'm not as enthusiastic to get through Prime 3 as I was with Prime 2 because I don't have any memories of it. Really, except for the 5 minutes I played. So I'm farther than that now. It's still stylish. It's still awesome. Unlike in Prime 2, where you come across a Federation starship of slaughtered crew and like kind of read their log and see what happened to them. You end up like in like this enormous fleet, and you're talking to a bunch of people and they're like wandering around the ship and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is great. They're alive. And then I remembered what kind of game I was playing and that these guys would all be dead before the intro sequence was finished. and that was unfortunately correct. So I'm in the first battle trying to beat that boss. And I had such a hard time acclimating to the controls, you know, doing the lock on and strafing because, you have to be pointing at the guy to do the lock on properly. And I'm not holding my remote right to get the lock on once it disappears. And they have to redo it. So there's also like, because when you lock on, you can still point. Look at this, like there's some float in there. You're supposed to aim at things on the screen that, you know, in Metroid Prime and the GameCube versions, you would just lock on. That would be like the point you have to shoot at and it would just fire and you're good to go. There's more effort here. So I might try to play some other games on my Pile of Shame first. Like, since it does 16:9 progressive scan and widescreen, I might go back to Shadow of the Colossus on my PS2, which I found working component cables for finally, and that's a whole story too.
Yeah, but the frame rate, you're gonna play, why don't you play
it
remake?
Is a bit choppy. I could, well, wait,
that's,
I don't have
PS,
a PS3.
That's PS3. Oh,
yeah,
never mind.
Yeah, unless they make that code available for PS4, I don't see. There's that. Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. So what's on your Pile of Shame?
No backwards compatibility. There's what should have been in this podcast.
Right?
There's a first world problem. No backwards compatibility. Okay, sorry. My Pile of Shame. The Fire Emblem.
Which one?
The first all one? Of them.
Oh,
all of them.
I have the first one, but it's all in Japanese, so...
Yep, I have most of the series, actually. I have the GameCube one. I have the Wii one, which is apparently quite expensive these days.
Oh, of course it is.
I think I picked it up for $15 during one of my trips back. But apparently it's quite expensive. The thing is that I have a bunch of ones in Japanese, which I'll never play. I mean, even if my Japanese gets really good, I don't know. The very early Famicom Fire Emblems, I think, are a bit slow-paced now.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, so the Fire Emblem series, one of Nintendo's big franchises. I watched the anime before I even knew it was a game.
Nice.
That way back in the day. But it's one of Nintendo's big franchises, and it didn't start coming to the States until the Game Boy Advance days, when they released what was, I think, maybe the sixth Fire Emblem game, and they released it just as Fire Emblem, because that's what we do in the U.S. and then they did Sacred Stones, which I owned, but never really got into much. So I guess the thing is, Fire Emblem for me has always been something that I would always think that I would like, and I think I will like it because I enjoyed games like Shining Force.
Mm.
So, you know, the kind of tactic strategy type game. And I almost played the Wii one, but then I heard it was a direct sequel to the GameCube one. So I had to track down the GameCube one, obviously.
Right.
But by that point, I don't know. I got it, and I never really got into it. What spurred my interest again is when I got this DS you sent me. I downloaded the demo for the Fire Emblem Awakening. I played through it, and it was super, super, super fun. It wasn't a long demo. I beat it in one sitting because it's very easy to do, but I really enjoyed it. And I'm like, oh, that's where, and hey, Marth is in it, which made me stop, actually. Cause I went, wait, I know Marth as a character from Smash Brothers. Thus, this is not a standalone game. It connects to something,
mm-hmm.
is what I was thinking. So then I'm like, because originally I was going to be like, okay, when I go back to the States, I'm going to buy this game. I'm going to buy Fire Emblem's Awakening because I'm really enjoying it. But then I'm like, this is maybe a sequel to something.
Right.
So I need to do some research and find out where my jump-in point is. And actually, if there's any Fire Emblem fans listening, where would be a good point to jump into the series? I want to play a game in English. I'm thinking right now that it might be good because I believe the Smash games have connection to the GameCube series. Because the one on GameCube has Ike. Ike's one of the Smash characters, right?
Right.
Okay. So maybe that's where Marth is from as well. I just don't know. I need to do some research. But or if anyone's played Awakenings and it really does stand alone and I'm not losing anything, because if it's a prequel or something, that's probably fine. If I'm not losing anything from it, that's the one I'll play because I was really enjoying that. But so if you're listening to this podcast, you know anything about the Fire Emblem series, tell me which one, and I'm going to start removing them from my pile of shame because it looks super fun.
Yeah, and tell me if I'm missing out in Prime 3. I mean, no huge spoilers. I know like the Dark Samus thing continues into the story, but like apart from that, like the controls get easier. You know, am I just being a big baby about it? Stuff like that.
A lot of people say who've played the games that the Wiimote control system is the superior one.
Are they all right-handed? You
know? That's a possibility. That is a possibility.
I'll try again playing as a right hander.
You can't play Corruption as a with a classic controller.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I can try, but I don't. I think the way that the lock on mechanism has changed in this game, it's not really possible. Also the way you select your visor is by holding down the minus button and then moving the remote to the correct quadrant, which I guess it's not impossible to do.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't think that it was really the ideal to make alternate control styles for Wii games, which is partly why I didn't see a lot of third party titles make the crossover.
Yeah. I guess that's it for this week. If you're a subscriber, check out the new issue of Retro Magazine.
Yes.
I am in Retro number 4. They put my review of Ninja Hattori-kun, which I'm very pleased to. It's always been kind of a dream of mine to be in a print magazine before they go away completely. and I love reading, and it's a really, really good magazine in general. And they're 4 issues in. I think the 5th is coming out soon. So actually, probably by the time you hear this podcast, it's probably too late to find the issue I'm in. But the digital back issues are available.
Which is hilarious in a way.
What?
Well, I mean, it's a print. If they want a copy, it has to be digital. It might as well be on a website.
Yeah. Well, back issues of that, and I believe the issue before it, are available on Game Gavel right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a Game Gavel member, you should be, because Game Gavel is a fantastic auction site, which cuts through the all the eBay inflation. And there's some generally good people selling stuff there, including me. I sell stuff on there.
I wonder if I can find a GameCube component cable for less than $200 out there.
It would be a good place to check.
All right, I guess with that, until next week, then the dojo is...
happy you voted.
Yep. Seems legit.
Famicom Dojo.
If you enjoyed this episode, please visit our show notes at famicomdojo.tv and leave a comment. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or our RSS feed. Rate and leave a comment on our free iTunes storefront, or call us at 608-492-1923 to share your thoughts. Follow Famicom Dojo on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to train your game. And visit littlepodcast.com to sponsor an episode, sign up for a free Audible trial, or listen to any of the other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.